Why do we exist? Were we created with a purpose? Or are we just here by chance? What are we to believe about life, faith, and worldview? Welcome to The Universe Next Door, focusing on answers to the questions we all consider. The Universe Next Door is supported by the C.S. Lewis Society, Trinity College of Florida, and supported by gifts from listeners just like you. Discover more resources and continue the conversation at apologetics.org. And now, your host, the research professor of Bible and theology at Trinity College of Florida, author and speaker, Dr. Tom Woodward.
We are launching out into our part two of the cruise. The cruise, yes.
The cruise next door.
The cruise. That's funny. That was totally spontaneous. Good job, Nick. Woohoo. Another fist bump. Come on, give me a fist bump. There you go. So I am excited that we are in the midst of a very important expose. Yes, the little accent on the E at the end of expose. We're going to be continuing to bring out point after point. You might even think of it as something like a primary. You know, we have a lot of primaries going on in the country today. And you have different people up for, you know, candidate, and I guess in this case for presidency. So this is like giving 20 good reasons not to vote for this theory, the theory of naturalistic origins of the first life. We're talking this week again, like we were last week, about chemical evolution, or if you want to use the technical word, abiogenesis. So biogenesis has the idea of the origin or genesis of life from life. So you put the A, the negative A, on the front of the word, and it means life from non-life. So abiogenesis, some people have pronounced it abiogenesis, however you want to pronounce it is fine with me. So abiogenesis or chemical evolution theory. And that is the theory that, as we said last week, traced its roots in its experimental phase to the work of Stanley Miller, a graduate student at the University of Chicago. He began to run the experiment in late, it was around Christmas time, the month of December in 1952. I was just 2 years old at the time. I wasn't really paying attention to science news that much. But when the experiment of sparking a mixture of methane, ammonia, water vapor and hydrogen gas finally produced detectable, you know, residues. There was a little stopcock on the bottom of this glass loop. They ran it day and night for weeks with the sparks going, I think, about once a second. So it was like electrical jolts. It was like lightning strikes in a primitive atmosphere. And it produced amino acids. And that was like, hallelujah, we've gotten to the explanation of everything. Now we know how. Even Darwin, it's funny, he speculated in a friend by the name of Hooker. He was a scientist here in that era. And so he said in his little friend to his letter, you know, one can speculate about life starting in a warm little pond. And there was like maybe, you know, chemical mixtures of phosphoric salts and this and that, and there was energy. So he actually had an imaginary picture that was not that far away from what happened, and he wrote that, I think it was 1880. And so literally in 75 years later, Miller was fleshing out what Darwin just glimpsed, what he was sort of sketching as an idea. Well, so we said last week that there was a series of huge, important, crucial, critical flaws in this theory that have come to light. And we want to actually point out again the massive book. It's 480-some pages, I think, in the text, Signature in the Cell. So if you want the book, the book of books, the book that actually won recognition from the London Times Literary Supplement as one of the books of the year, 2009. Woo-hoo! Recommended by atheist philosopher Thomas Nagel. Double hoo-hoo-hoo! That was pretty poor. I did my best. But that Signature in the Cell is mandatory reading for anybody who wants to understand this area. But if you want to just have it on hand, you know, Stephen Meyer's book, Signature in the Cell, and supplement it with a 48-minute, I think it's around, just shy of 50 minutes if I remember, a Lustrum Media video, Unlocking the Mystery of Life, Origin. The bold O-R-I-G-I-N across the front of the DVD. This is beautifully done. It has a hilarious segment where literally an amoeba crawls all the way across the universe, carrying one atom on its back, drops it off at the other end, comes back at the same speed, you know, 1 foot per year. And that that amoeba makes many, many trips across the universe. And meanwhile, a single protein has not succeeded in forming in the oceans of the Earth. It's just a genius, ingenious, ingenious presentation. There's no, I would say, documentary anywhere in the history of the world that has done the job that Origin has done. And you know what? Anybody who writes in by email to information@apologetics.org, let me give that one more time. If you were to write and say, hey, I listened to your program and I like it. Hopefully you like it. I don't think you'd be listening to it if you didn't like it. But if you've gotten something out of it, we'd love to hear anything that you may have, you know, benefited, and that will actually provide guidance to us. And we will send to you, if you provide a mailing address at no charge, as our way of saying thank you, we will present to you through the mail your own copy of this amazing DVD, Unlocking the Mystery of Life, Origin. And so it's just a brilliant, brilliant production. Has all the top scientists being interviewed, has special effects, music, it has it all. And subtitle on that, How Did Life on Earth Begin? Well, that's our discussion point again today. I will go ahead and tick down some of these points that we covered last week. We covered 8 of them. We said that the Miller-Urey experimental gases, the 4 gases that we mentioned, were wrong. And that was determined not too long after, literally about 10 years after their experiment, scientists began to realize, oops, we have the wrong gases. So the experiment of Miller and Urey, really, which is still required, you know, learning in high school textbooks, is bad science. And I think it's an abandonment of a commitment to good science when teachers don't bring out the problems. Number 2, when correct gases, the more plausible gases, are used in place of those 4 wrong gases, the results are minimal. In other words, you hardly get any amino acids. You get irrelevant chemical products that have nothing to do with life. Number 3, the question of oxygen is especially crucial, because if there was free oxygen, it kills these chemical experiments. In other words, you don't form amino acids. You don't form nucleic acids. You don't form these spectacularly important special sugars, the deoxyribose sugar and the ribose sugar. You don't form them if there's free oxygen. And yet the rocks down at the deepest part, the basement rocks of our Earth, showing what was around in the atmosphere in eras past, all the way down, it shows iron oxides and other kinds of oxidated metal elements. And so oxygen was always here, meaning forget about it as far as this experiment having plausibility. Number 4, amino acids have this quirky nature that they, when they're zapped and produced in these experiments, they always come up with 2 sides, 2 kinds, 2 varieties, right-handed, left-handed, comparing your right hand to left hand, and yet only left-handed are used in proteins. How can you keep shooing away the righties? It would make the formation of a single protein extremely implausible. Number 5, even if you had all left-handed, you would still need to get the correct linkages. And you can do that in a ribosome factory, but you can't, swimming free in the ocean, form a beautiful protein. And even if you had only left-handed amino acids, which would be a miracle, how can you get just the correct peptide linkages and not all these other crazy chemical linkages? Number 6, even if you got, even granting all peptide good bonds and all left-handed amino acids, you're still not even close to having a single protein, because you have to get the correct order of amino acids. That is the most important of all. Number 7, the RNA world, which was like, ooh, ooh, right? I'm trying to do an emergency vehicle. That was probably the worst attempt.
No, I thought it was really good. Oh, yeah. I thought there was an ambulance outside.
Oh, really? You're such an encourager. So the emergency vehicle comes in. I'm going to rescue the theory. It's RNA. So it wasn't really amino acids that started everything out. We had RNA first, and then from those evolved amino acids and DNA. Well, the RNA, which has a string of ribosugars and phosphates with little, nucleotides, there's the four letters of DNA, and likewise there's four letters of RNA, A, U, C, G, adenine, uracil, thymine, CG, cytosine, guanine. Even if you had the four letters, okay, RNA world is no help because the ribose sugars are extremely hard to synthesize, not to mention how hard it is to synthesize those four letters, the amino acid, the nucleotide letters. But the ribose sugar are hard to synthesize, and secondly, guess what? They come in a right-handed and left-handed format too. I thought, oh, no, that again? Yes, and only the right-handed are used, okay? And number eight, we mentioned terminators. Okay, now in the remaining 13 and a half minutes, I'm going to go through the other 12 problems on top of these eight. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
Your seat, you're buckled into your seat?
Yeah.
Okay. So even if, this is point number nine, even if you were to get an RNA molecule or a DNA molecule to come together magically, by sheer dumb luck, try it enough, just give enough throws of the dice and you'll come up with the correct, low probability answer. Where do you store, or even an amino acid chain, even if you had a single correctly ordered with just left-handed amino acids and peptide bonds and the correct order, where do you store that protein chain until you get the second one? Because once you hum up with these products, there's no little, okay, let's throw it in the fridge. Yeah, I have a nice little Ziploc bag. We'll put it in here, put it in the fridge, it'll stay. So there is no way to store the products while you're waiting and waiting and waiting long enough for the next to be produced. No storage, no preservation, they would fall apart. The growing amino acid chain always tends to fall apart when it's in water. So that's a huge problem. Number 10, now a single cell, we've learned in the last decade, a single cell, it was experimentally proven through a very elite team, a single cell needs at least 469, that's 469 different protein products that are rooted in the actual genes. So you can describe it as 469 genes or 469 protein products. So it's not like, okay, maybe we can get up to 5 or 10 of these and we have life and everything just kind of takes off from natural selection.
Mm-hmm.
No, you don't even begin until you have 469 of these,
yeah,
of these miracles.
That's a lot.
That is a lot. Number 11. Sometimes scientists, and we're getting into some of these other items, are like, hey, we have a rescue. We have a, kind of a an emergency vehicle arriving on the scene just in time to rescue the theory from its doldrums. So the open system, we know thermodynamically this explanation doesn't hold much water, but maybe we have because of the open system, the sunlight drives it. I'm sorry. The problem number 11 is that the sunlight can heat things, and it may even cause a chemical reaction. But the sunlight is a terrible actor. It doesn't have the power as an actor to organize the amino acids in the proper order. Because I like letters and a text message. And what you need is a blueprint and then some person who has chemical power in proper useful form, who can organize those letters like a person sitting at a keyboard of a computer. Number 12, the DNA pieces themselves. I'm talking about the structure of DNA now, because you can't have life until you get all the way from amino acids into DNA. The actual four letters of DNA, adenine, thymine, cytosine, guanine, are so beautifully designed, so exquisitely chosen among an array of potentially hundreds of chemicals that could have been used, it looks suspiciously like something that was engineered and finely designed. Now, this is coming out not from Christians who are working in science. This is from secular research, trying to see, is there potentially better chemicals that we could actually artificially improve DNA? And apparently, the bad news for Darwin's theory and for modern chemical evolution theory is it looks like the best is what we have. Now, Nick does not necessarily, make you, just even if you're an honest agnostic, like it looks suspiciously like it was set up.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a number of people, I think Richard Dawkins included, who have basically said everything, including life, looks designed, but it can't be.
Yeah. So the admission of design is there, and they just try to explain it away. Number 13, the chicken and egg problem is looming always. What do we mean by that? You don't have a chicken without an egg that it hatched from, and you don't have an egg unless it was laid by the mama chicken. So in the same way, DNA and RNA, its sister molecule, need proteins to manage them, assemble them, operate them, and yet proteins have this awkward situation of being produced through the blueprint in DNA and RNA. So unless you have one and the other, you don't have a system. In other words, there would be no reason to keep any molecule around. You know, nature wants to just basically toss them aside. So you would need to just get not just amino acids to come together and form a bunch of proteins, 469 different ones. By the way, they have to be just the just right sequence. You would have to have, in addition to that, these amino acid chains, you'd have to have the DNA and the RNA to form them and in the integrated system that they have. Number 14, there is just an amazing number of attempts to put together protocells, imagined, look, we can actually see what an early evolutionarily threshold cell, first cell, looks like. These protocells, sometimes they're called coacervates, they're proteinoid microspheres. There's a whole vocabulary used in this area. But these protocells are physically look like cells, but they have no chemical properties that are mirroring or, you know, paralleling the function of real cells. So when you read in the literature, oh, look, we've had another breakthrough. We've had another beautiful kind of protocell. Be very careful, because the proteinoid microspheres, the coacervates, the other kind of protocells have just a superficial look. They look like a bubble, but that's all they are. They're a bubble with chemicals on the outside. They don't have any of the functional sophistication of a cell. And so the similarity, I'll just say it again, is superficial at best. Okay, so that's 14. Number 15, the pinprick proposal. Jonathan Wells, a top cell biologist in the intelligent design movement, said, I can disprove chemical evolution theory by a pinprick. And people say, what do you mean by that? He says, you take an actual cell, a bacterial cell, stick a pin, all the interior part of the cell gushes out. So you have what you need right there. Now, see if all the constituent elements will form into a cell. And the people, of course, fall silent. Well, wait a minute. That won't happen. Oh, wait. He said, wait a minute. I already brought you to the threshold of life. You have all you need.
That's a good point.
And I think that the pinprick point of Jonathan Wells is just amazing, amazing, amazing. Okay, so that's, I think we're up to 15. 16, how many do you need just to form the minimal system of forming from amino acids using transfer RNAs inside a ribosome machine? I mean, that is the core of the core. How many digital media files do you need? Think of how many files on your hard drive just to get the very threshold of life. And that the answer is over 40. And this is brought out in Steve Meyer's book, Signature in the Cell. And so if you need over 40 just to get the most minimal function, we're talking about not even the 469 genes, just the most basic functions, or you would need 40 of those. Forget about it. It will not happen for many, many reasons we've already brought out. Number 17, People will often invoke things that have been found, like in the ocean. We have vents, volcanic vents. They say, those could be the place where life started because we have energy. You see, we have subterranean lava spewing out, and we see bubbles coming up. It's very impressive. It makes for a good National Geographic, report. The problem with vents or any other kind of source of energy is that they do not have the ability to organize the constituent nucleotides into a meaningful pattern. You need intelligence. And we're seeing a pattern here. All through these 17 items we brought out last week and this week, you need intelligence, and the theory provides, and actually forbids intelligence. It says, do not consider that. And we say, why? Oh, it doesn't fit our view of science. Well, wait a minute. Science is supposed to be open to all possibilities. Is not the existence of God at least one possibility? Is not prior intelligence above and beyond the universe at least a possibility? Oh, no, I don't want to think about that. Well, that's more of a personal venting of your personal feelings than a scientific argument. Some people, number 18, try to escape into the multiverse. Oh, there may be billions of other beautifully existing, wonderfully existing universes, but they are not as fine-tuned as this one. This universe was just fine-tuned for life to start. So maybe the odds, you give enough time, and so maybe our universe is hundreds of billions of years old, not just 13.8 or whatever, or trillions of years. Maybe they're just off, and there's enough time, and there are enough universes that, given enough time, anything can happen. Well, the problem with the multiverse is there's no evidence that it exists. There is no evidence that in a hyperspace manifold above this universe, any other universe exists. By definition, they are projections. They're literally personal fantasy projections. And so the whole multiverse theory that has been the rage, it's been so popular for the last 30, 35 years, is built on a foundation of sand. Number 19, experiments that have been done to support this whole thing of chemical evolution, abiogenesis, the experiments that have been done have used investigator interference to push chemical reactions down a particular narrow pathway. And if you just leave nature on its own and pull back and do not guide chemical reactions, you see nothing happening. And this is an important point. When Charles Thaxton wrote, co-authored with Walter Bradley and Roger Olson, The Mystery of Life's Origin, the book that launched intelligent design in 1984, his book was hailed. I have two reviews by Yale University biochemists and other Yale University professors of medicine and biology. And they hailed this book. Yale University professors hailed this book as a breakthrough. And one of the things that they pointed out in the book is that you have investigator interference mucking up these experiments. And when you pull that away, nothing seems to happen. The investigators are really, they're basically saying nature did it when in fact they pushed it down the pathway. They were the ones that caused the results.
Yeah, there was a mind
exactly
behind it.
And last but not least, I'll just say, I'm just going to pick on one wonderful super molecule. It's called the synthetase. It's a tRNA. Some of you know the tRNA. It helps bring together amino acids to the messenger RNA. It's like a little clover leaf. It's an L-shaped molecule. In order to get tRNA and the amino acid to basically come together, to join together, there is a larger monster molecule that forms like a couch. And it's sculpted just for those two to come together. So when you see a synthetase molecule, you're looking directly in the face of God. And there's 20 different synthetase molecules, at least 20. I think there's a little over 20. And when I look at a synthetase, a tRNA synthetase molecule that joins the correct amino acid, it's like a matchmaker, with the correct tRNA and says, with your little anticodon sticking out the other end, you're the amino acid to go with it. It's like hyper-intelligence revealed before a watching scientific world. God is the creator, and Jesus, who died for you and rose again, is your savior. If you will open the door of your heart to him today, thanks for listening to The Universe Next Door.
You've been listening to The Universe Next Door with Dr. Tom Woodward, sponsored by the C.S. Lewis Society and Trinity College of Florida, and supported through the gifts of listeners just like you. To gather resources, continue the conversation, and support The Universe Next Door with your financial gifts, go to apologetics.org. That's apologetics.org. And join us again next time as we continue to seek the truth about life, faith, and worldview in The Universe Next Door.